Donovan Mitchell is damn near averaging 40. Jamal Murray, 35, 36. Crazy efficient, dominant scoring numbers that we've never seen before, especially from two young stars like that. Is it official? Have both of these two young guys taken that elusive step from star to superstar in this bubble? Is that what we're watching? Or are these numbers simply inflated by the matchup in the bubble? Let's examine why these guys are putting up crazy numbers. And it's not just Jamal Murray and Donovan Mitchell. You look around the bubble, obviously offense is off the charts. But there's Seth Curry, who's jumped 10% in field goal percentage. Serge Ibaka, Reggie Jackson. Guys that, you know, are nice offensive players, but all of a sudden are historically efficient shooting the basketball. I think the first thing that everybody has pointed out is the physical environment, the bubble, the backdrop, right? There's no crowd. It's dark, the lighting, and that allows for your, as a shooter, for your eyes to lock on the target. Those of you that don't hoop or haven't spent a lot of time in gyms, this is a very real thing. I can give you two examples. Have you ever played in a gym or a tournament? There's 5-6 courts wide. And it doesn't really matter which court you're on, but if you're on one of the far courts and you're shooting from the far baseline where you can see all those courts in the background, that's a tough shot, man. There's just too much going on in your peripheral and the background and the lights for you to zoom in and focus, lock in on the target. The other example I'll give you, if you're just someone that hoops outside at a park, have you ever hooped at a park where there's a huge skyline behind the basket? There's that infamous basketball hoop in Southern California with, I think it's the Korean Peace Bell. Don't quote me on that. There's some sort of peace bell. My boy brought me out there one time and we took some photos or whatever. You see it, it's a landmark, right? And there's that huge sunset. The backdrop essentially is the ocean, right? I guarantee you, you're not going to shoot well there. Now you could adjust if you did it every day, but that's what hoopers and shooters are talking about as far as the atmosphere and the backdrop. Infamously, the Lakers, the Staples Center, they darken the crowd to help the shooters. They also say it's, you know, for a atmosphere, right? The spotlight is on the court, but it also helps their shooters. Historically, the Lakers have been good offensive teams. There's various reasons for that. So that's one, right? The backdrop, the physical environment. The second thing, let's talk about the crowd, right? The lack thereof crowd and that distraction. And every player is different with this. We know certain guys feed off that energy. Some of them like the negative energy. They like to be on the road and they play better. Some like the embrace of a home crowd and being cheered and feeding off that energy, right? Well, when you're a shooter and you get in a rhythm and you get hot and you reach that elusive flow state, right? How do you stay in the flow state? What breaks the flow state? Maybe it's a hard Marcus Morris foul, right? Who knows? But I think one of the main things that breaks a player's flow state and when they're in the zone and when they're hot is the crowd. And it's not necessarily a negative crowd. I think for a young player in particular, it could be your home crowd that breaks it. Because all of a sudden, the crowd is going nuts. You've hit three threes in a row and the place is just, the volume has gone up, the excitement, the energy, and that breaks your flow. That breaks your concentration. It's gotten you overexcited. And now when you're in a quiet gym and there's no crowd to have your emotions go up and down and teeter-totter like that, now once you've found a rhythm and you've gotten in the zone or the flow state, I think you can stay there longer in a quiet environment, in a gym with no other sounds but just the screeches of the court and the players' voices. So I think that's number two. The third thing that I think we have to acknowledge is the three ball and the green light that these young players are being given, right? The heat checks are hotter. And you look at some of the shots that Murray in particular, but Donovan as well, some of these step back deep threes and these heat checks, they're just simply shots that weren't being allowed for players to take 5 and 10 years ago. Like even Kobe probably wouldn't take some of these. Now, he might, right? But I don't think he would take them with his team's approval. We all know Kobe can jack up some shots, right? But that my point is that not even Kobe was taking shots like this. These deep step back threes and things like that off screens, off movement like that. And so the green light has gotten greener, the heat checks have gotten hotter, and therefore there's just more possibility to get hot. The how prolific the three ball has become is going to inflate some of these numbers when you compare them to past stars and past eras. It's just what it is. And again, this isn't something you don't know, right? This isn't a secret, but it has to be acknowledged when we're talking about these numbers. Murray's 50-point performance, in most of those games, he's hitting 8-9 threes. Something else that's very new to the NBA scene in the last few years and in sports science is sleep, right? You've probably read numerous articles on it in LeBron James's secret, right? Sleep and how much that can affect your performance. Now, here's where I'm guessing a little bit. I'm hypothesizing here. But if I were to guess, I think these players are getting more sleep and better sleep. One, they're not traveling, right? So we all know athletes are creatures of habit. Their routines, their wind down times, everything is set. It's not getting altered. And then if I were to venture to guess, right, they're not drinking, they're not partying, they're not going to their boy's house, right? Everybody is kind of being held accountable because everybody sees everybody all the time. If you wanted to go get lit with, you know, if JR wants to get off the Henny, LeBron might come knocking on his door to talk to him about something. Like he can't, I think the guys are being held more accountable, one, because of fear of their teammates seeing what they're doing. And two, they don't really have a choice, right? They're all confined to this bubble. And so there's less things to do and there's more focus on the game, rest and preparation. So I've laid out various reasons why we're seeing these prolific numbers from these stars. I don't want to take nothing away from them. I want to enjoy it. Jamal Murray and Mitchell, this has been the story of the first round and it's been spectacular to watch, right? I just want to point out that there's a reason for it. I think that there is somewhat of an asterisk next to these numbers they're putting up in this first round. There is. But with that being said, moving forward, once the league is, things are back to normal outside of the bubble, are these guys superstars? Have they taken that step? That's what I opened up the video with. Now, I don't think there's any way that this is sustainable. We're all in agreement, right? They're not going to average 35, 40 points. They're not, I don't think, all of a sudden going to become the two best scorers in the league. Some of this, I had also forgot to mention that, you know, some of this is the matchup, the familiarity and the way these two teams are deciding to guard these guys with their bigs and their limitations. There's that as well. But moving forward, again, look, they're not going to be able to take a lot of this, a lot of these advantages that I've just laid out for you forward into a regular NBA season. But what they can take is this confidence. The hardest step that there is to take for a player in the NBA is from going from a star to a superstar. What is the separator there? Now, a lot of you will probably say physical attributes. Like you see Jason Tatum, you're like, all right, well, you know, that's the separator. There's guys that are shooters that are nice, that are very skilled and talented, but Jason Tatum, 6'8", he's athletic, he's smooth, it's butter, right? I'll give it to you. Some of it is, a lot of it is physical attribute when you get up to that tier. But I think the biggest separator is confidence. And that's what Mitchell and Murray can take out of this bubble environment and move forward with it regardless of the circumstances, because they are aware of what they're capable of. And they've done it on this huge stage in a playoffs where it's very meaningful. So for them to carry that with them out of this bubble and further into their career, I think that's what may allow them to both become superstars. So I'm not taking that off the table. I'm just not willing to say they're there yet because of all these factors, these weird factors in this bubble. But I think the confidence and showing themselves in the world what they're capable of, if they can carry that confidence back into a normal league, I think it's a good chance both of these two young guys become superstars. All right, let's talk about the Eastern Conference and some of these round two game ones that we've seen and what we've learned. Boston comes out and really just dominates from the tip Toronto. I think Boston benefited from playing the Sixers in round one. Brooklyn, they're fun. They score a lot of points. I don't think it sharpened Toronto. I think Toronto was kind of in cruise control throughout that series, and it showed up in game one against Boston. Whereas Boston, yes, both Boston and Toronto swept. I understand that. But how they did it was a little bit differently. I thought it was easier for Toronto, where Philadelphia pushed Boston more and forced them to be on point. And we saw them carry that into this game one in a neutral site. I think if you want to talk about home court advantage, Toronto is missing it arguably more than any team. You could argue the Lakers, they haven't been in the playoffs in so long and how crazy that Staples Center would be. But Toronto, we know what the North brings. We know that atmosphere and how they feed off it. Hence why, I don't know if you've seen, but Toronto, they've totally decked out their floor in their hotel, right, to try to give it that vibe and that home court advantage. They're definitely missing that. But I thought they weren't sharp. I thought they came out sluggish. A couple of quick thoughts about it. Tatum, as good as he is, as smooth as he is to watch, I think the next step for Tatum is drawing contact. He has that big slithery Euro step when he gets downhill and it works so well for him. But he almost always avoids contact at all costs. Even when he gets a guy to bite on a pump fake, he'll lean and try to make the shot. And part of that is the cost of Tatum being such a good shot maker. When you're such an elite shot maker and you get your shot off whenever you want, he's never interested in just taking the cheap foul and getting to the line. And it's something that you see all great scorers and all the stars of this league eventually learn that they have to do, especially in the playoffs when defenses are more keyed to stop them and it's just not going to come as easy, right? And so as smooth as he is, I think he's going to have to figure that out. Like sometimes just take the cheap one, draw the contact, absorb it, and get to the line. He wants to just score too cleanly, if that makes sense. And look, Kemba had the scary fall. I'm very curious to see how he looks today because when you're chipped up or you're banged up, that adrenaline, you know, it's going to allow him to play through it. And he looked great. He looked great, right? It's how he felt the next day, how he felt when the adrenaline wore off. It didn't appear to be the same. It's the same knee, but it didn't appear like he was worried. So I think that's a little bit comforting. But ultimately, I think with Boston, their bench concerns me. They went to Robert Williams, and he's a pogo stick flying around, just being a physical kind of crazy rim protector, right? But I don't know. He's probably going to average a foul a minute. I don't know how long that will last as Cantor lies in wait, right? But you look at their bench, Wanamaker, Grant Williams, Ojale. It feels like there's just one too many G Leaguers in that rotation. And you know, Stevens, I understand the system probably amplifies those guys within the system. And we'll see how far it takes them. Right now, it's been fine, right? Obviously, you can't complain. Boston hasn't lost a game. I understand that. But I'm just saying, I feel a little iffy with that second unit, you know, with Hayward out and they've lost some of that depth. And now you're leaning on those guys and little G League. That second unit's a little G League, right? Now, as far as Toronto goes, if you were to have asked me, like, is Siakam going to be a number one? Can Siakam be the guy? I didn't think so because of his limited tool bag. Siakam is a guy who, you know, he's kind of Giannis light. He's kind of Giannis light. He doesn't have those physical attributes that Giannis has. He has good physical attributes, but it seems like he's very reliant on those attributes as far as speed and length. He's got great hip bend, right? He can play very low for a 6'10" player. That great spin move, but he needs to play in transition and he needs to play fast. And when the game slows down, like the posting up of Siakam, I don't feel good about it. I think ultimately when the game slows down, Toronto is going to have to be relying on those two small guards, Lowry and Van Vliet. And hey, they got it done last year, right? So I'm not saying they can't do it. I'm just saying, I don't think when the game slows down and Boston is forcefully slowing down this game, or at least cutting off that transition offense, I don't think Siakam can be that number one option. And that's what Toronto's going to learn in this series. Now, Marc Gasol. I don't know if someone maybe bring up a name, but have you ever seen a more accomplished player struggle with his confidence this much? He's such a reluctant shooter and scorer. And I understand, you know, he's older along in his career, but I think he's going to get played off the court here. Like if he's not going to make them pay on the offensive end for what they're doing to him on the defensive end, you got to get him out of there. It's almost as if like Powell used to punk him too much as a kid. And so he never got that big brother confidence, right? He's clearly like a younger sibling because he doesn't have that confidence that I think he should have. If he was just letting it fly from behind the arc like Lopez, you know, or one of these bigs that's more confident, I think he could do it. I just don't think it's in him. And then they don't really take advantage of his size against Tice or any of these guys. So I say all that to say I think Gasol is getting played off the floor in this series. And, you know, I think the obvious move for Nurse is to go small when you look at Boston's lineup. Play Siakam at the five. Maybe that helps him get back to using his physical attributes and having an advantage there. and then you go with Powell and you go with Terrence Davis, however you want to do it, a three-guard lineup. Like, up and down the roster, Toronto is athletic, right? But at the spots that matter, like in the backcourt, they're the athletic deficit. Fred VanVleet is used to being the lower and quicker guy. He's used to being quicker, and he's used to being the lower player, having his hips lower. And the Kemba Walker matchup, that's just not the case. He's not quicker, and he's probably not lower. And so that's a funky matchup for him, and I think they're just going to need to spread it out and play smaller to try to get out in transition. All right, Miami and Milwaukee. Yo, my hat's off to Jimmy Butler. I've got to apologize to the Jimmy Butler hive. My guy Shin, people have pointed out, look, I've had people come at me like, hey man, Butler, you're underrating Butler. Maybe I have been, man. He's, you know, like, bum stash Butler is clearly better than playoff P. We're early. We're game one, round two, right? But it really feels like Miami has just brought the best out in Jimmy Butler. It's a perfect fit culturally for him, and they've empowered him. Like, he's seizing the moment. I got to see it for this entire series. I don't know if it's sustainable. It feels difficult. It feels like how he's scoring is difficult. But I think also what you're seeing is, once again, Bud's system being exposed here. That drop coverage and how they're guarding him, he is way too comfortable coming off a screen and understanding I can get into my little pull-up whenever I want comfortably. He knows it, and he's very comfortable, and Milwaukee's got to do something to break that comfort. Dragic was huge. I'm getting real like Sprewell Nick vibes from this Heat team. They're just tough, and you can see Butler has them believing. They've got an attitude. It's perfect. Riley and Spo, like what they've built with this Bam Hero matches everything. Like the synergy, the chemistry, you bring in Iguodala and Crowder, like they're probably, they've got to be the toughest team in the league, in the bubble right now, right? Like, if you want to just talk about toughness and grit, and it's just a bad matchup for Milwaukee, man. It's a bad matchup. They may end up escaping this, but there will be blood. There will be blood in this matchup, and Miami takes care of business in game one. Again, no home court. The Bucks missing that home court advantage. Now, I think the story from Milwaukee is Giannis's free throws. He was 4 of 12. There's been a lot made about his shooting, his three-point shooting. Has it been ruined? His arms, how long they are, how long it takes for him to uncoil and release a shot. If you ask me, at least at the free throw line, he's taking way too long. He's freezing himself up there. He'd be better off just stepping up and quickly flinging it at the basket with no thought whatsoever. The fact that he's taking his time, breathing, and trying to really rigidly form shoot these free throws, I think it's hurting his cause. He'd be better off taking two quick pound dribbles and just kind of without thought letting it go. I think he'd shoot a higher percentage. I really do. Middleton was good. Look, Middleton is a very good number two. He is. But I think what you have to understand is if you're Giannis's number two, late in games, you've got to be the number one. And Middleton's shot selection, he's probably the best bad shot maker in the league, but do you want to take bad shots late in games in the playoffs? It's right. So that I think that's a predicament, but ultimately I think Bud and his scheme, they're going to have to change something there with Jimmy Butler. You heard Giannis being asked after the game, are you going to guard Jimmy Butler? And he was kind of defensive about that. And the way that the league is now, like, you can put whoever you want on anybody, but the way they run these screens and get the switches, I mean, I'd like to see that matchup a little bit, but I think that, again, ultimately, Bud's got to change a little bit of that scheme, whether Lopez is showing a little more, or, you know, obviously Bledsoe wasn't there, but they can't let Butler just get to that little midi real comfortable like it's a warm-up, Jay. He's proving that he can hit it. But I think the Bucks are in real trouble here. I think this goes seven. I can't call it. You know, there's going to be some injuries. It's a very physical game. Will they get Bledsoe back? But this is a tough series, and I'm leaning Miami right now. I just think because of the neutral environment, and I think the energy that Butler is bringing to his young teammate. You got Goran, the vet, right, and Iguodala. You got nice little sprinkle of vets to go along with Butler leading these young boys. They believe, right? Bam and Hero think they're winning this game. There was a real swagger to them. Like, this was expected. We expect to beat this Bucks team. That's troublesome. That's troublesome if you're a Bucks fan, right? All right, last game let's cover here, OKC Houston. We've got a game seven. We've got a game seven. I liked SGA delivering the elbow to the neck to Tucker on that first series. That was planned. There's little things. That's old school stuff, man. That's part of the game. Look, you don't want to like break somebody's nose or knock somebody out of the game, but it was a quick statement like, look, we're not putting up with your bullying on these screens. Like, we are going to push back. Here's an elbow for your efforts. So I like that. To me, I've spoken a little bit about this. I've been tweeting about it a little bit. The Dort experiment, I'm not with it. I don't agree with it. I understand that he brings a level of physicality and he's not afraid, right? He brings some energy to the court. But overall, I think Harden is his own worst enemy. Like, Harden's good. You don't stop Harden. Harden stops himself. And so I don't think the juice is worth the squeeze to have Dort out there, because that shot, man, that shot, like, it cracks me up, because when he lets it go, he has no idea if it's going to go in until it doesn't. Right? Like, he's goosenecking, he's holding it, he's leaving it, and then he's waiting. Oh, he has no idea. And hoopers know, like, you know, like, most of the time when you release a shot, you know, if you're a shooter. And Dort, clearly not a shooter. I'm just not so sure. I think I might rather have Ferguson in there, to be honest with you, because I think he'd hit more threes. And again, I think Harden is going to be Harden regardless. Now, Russ is catching the bulk of flack for this L. What do you have, like 8 turnovers? Obviously, his timing is off. And that's what's going to happen, man. When you are a player like Westbrook, who's so reliant on speed and pace, and you jump back into a playoff series after being out, your timing is going to be off. And that's what it was. And it's fair to blame him for it. That's fine. But ultimately, this is going to fall on James Harden. If they get dropped here in game seven, this is going to be another blow to his legacy, man. Like, he's starting to run out of time here with proving himself in the playoffs. Like, is he officially a playoff choker? Right? And Chris Paul, just amazing. Because, you know, I watch him and I feel like it's going to leave him overnight. It feels like his feet almost can't keep up with his handle at time. Like, he's slowing down a little bit. But even when Chris Paul was in his prime, I think Chris Paul's greatest attribute is his will to compete. And he willed that team down the stretch. Shout out Gallo. Gallo, like, I'm not a fan. Like, I feel like I've never seen him show up in a big game. He showed up last night. So OKC, just like CP said, they've got a chance. They've got a chance. Now, if I were a betting man, I'd bet Houston gets hot and finishes out in game seven. But I think they get it done. But I'm excited for that game seven anyway. And then the game seven, Denver, Utah. Patrons, I'll have a breakdown of that one. And hey, maybe Jokic and Denver will make me eat my words, man. I'll call it what it is. I'll admit when I'm wrong, but I think Utah gets it done. I'm out, y'all.